Join me in John chapter 11. I want you to notice with me for a moment a few things from this story. Think of John 11. Death is on display for us in all of its ugly detail, every facet of it. Chapter 11 begins with a sickness in verse 1. A certain man was sick, Lazarus, the text says. Sickness often precedes death. And as has always been the custom, loved ones are notified when the illness is serious. Verse 3 says, so the sisters sent word to Jesus about this illness. And then if you skip ahead to verse 14, there is that awful moment that most of us all know well. When Jesus tells his disciple, Lazarus is dead. And then in verse 19, the gathering of loved ones, many of the Jews had come to Mary and Martha to console them. And then in what is surely one of the most moving parts of the story is the grieving. Verse 32. Therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and fell at his feet, saying, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled, and said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews were saying, see how he loved him. And then in verse 38, there's the place of the burial. We're told in this case it was a cave with a stone laying in front of the entrance. And notice in verse 39 that no awful detail is spared, even the stench of a decaying corpse. Not something we usually talk about. Is mentioned when Jesus orders the tomb open. 12 times in chapter 11, death is specifically mentioned. A dark scene. And one with which I think most all of us are well acquainted, aren't we? Yet, oddly, as we make our way through this chapter, there are these moments in the text where there are these little glimmers of hope. So if you go back up to verse 4, when Jesus talks to his disciples about this, about Lazarus' illness, he says, this sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by it. That's sort of an odd thing to say, isn't it? And then when he announces to the disciples in verse 14 that Lazarus has died, he goes on to say, and I am glad, how odd was that, for your sakes, that I was not there, so that you may believe. And then there's the exchange with Martha, starting in verse 21. Even Martha seems to believe that the death of her brother may not be the end of the story. In verse 21, Martha then said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But then she adds in 22, even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. What does she anticipate? And Jesus will grab that thought and go on. In verse 23, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her in in the thematic line of the whole sermon, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord. I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world. It is when they get to the tomb that this really becomes dramatic. Jesus orders the tomb opened, only to be met with protests. It's too late. He's already dead. He's already undergoing decay. It's too late. To which Jesus responds, did I not say that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Where's this going? And then there is the prayer in verse 41, followed by the command in verse 43. What a bizarre command. Lazarus, come forth. What was he expecting? How must have that appeared to the onlookers? Ridiculous. Until Lazarus walked out. It is a stunning miracle, arguably only eclipsed by Jesus' own resurrection from the dead. The text goes on to say that many believed in him. That's what he said would happen. But not all. Perhaps equally stunning is the reaction of his enemies to the reports of this stunning miracle. If you look down to verse 48, this is the way the story concludes. The enemies, oddly, are not convinced by the miracle, but instead concerned for themselves. If Jesus keeps doing this, these amazing signs, well, their fear was they would lose their place. And so they had to do away with him, verse 53. They planned from that day to kill him. Isn't that bizarre? Their reaction to the life giver is that they are determined to put him to death. But it is the words of the high priest that I especially want you to take note of. This is verse 49 of chapter 11. This is interesting. Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you take into account that it is expedient for you that one man die for the people, and that the whole nation not perish." And then John adds, he did not say this on his own initiative, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but in order that he might also gather together into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. How bizarre is that? That the adversary says Jesus must die so the nation does not perish. Of course, I think his thinking is only political at this point. He's determined to preserve the current system and their place in it. But unwittingly, he has declared the bigger picture of what is to happen. Jesus will die for the nation. He will give his life so that they can live, so that we can live, so that we can have life, and every kind of life. Jesus provides spiritual life. Paul describes it in Ephesians chapter 2, we're dead in sin but made alive by Christ. And in Romans 6, he would say we are raised from death in baptism to walk in newness of life. So there's a new path of life, walking in the footsteps of Jesus. And we live with the promise of eternal life with God in heaven, life in every way. And we know it's true. We know this claim that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. We know it is true. Why? Because he called the corpse from the grave. And then he died and rose victorious over the grave. So this morning we come to the table to celebrate the life giver. I am, he said, the resurrection and the life. To celebrate the one who died so that we can live.